Reroll.
Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature guitar slinger, singer, songwriter, recording artist, Grammy Award nominated recording artist, and guitarist to the stars, Tom Holland. Let's roll. Tom Holland, welcome to the Farmwell Studios.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jim. Thank you for having me.
You had a good ride out here through the cornfields?
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful day for a ride in the cornfields.
Well, you know, this summer I saw you running around the Chicago Blues Fest, and you seem to be the hardest working man in town. I mean, you were on every stage.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on there?
Oh, luck of the draw.
Yeah, who were you playing with?
The first day was John Primer.
Okay.
And then Saturday with Chicago Wind, which is Matthew Scholar and Dietra Farr's band. And then Sunday was with Omar Coleman. And every one of those days I was working doubles, and I think the Saturday I had a triple.
Nice. I mean, during the fest, you just have to kind of take it while it's there.
And, you know, the last couple of years I was either out of town or, you know, just, you know, didn't get down to the festival. So it was, you know, it was funny this year. Everybody can say, I keep seeing you everywhere. Are they renaming the festival the Tom Holland Blues Festival?
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's go way back to the beginning. How did you get started playing the blues?
You know, my dad had a gigantic record collection, and, you know, with everything from classical, blues, jazz, rock. And so, you know, he liked blues and R&B and that stuff. So, you know, that he started playing, you know, that was always being played around the house.
Right. And
I saw Eddie Van Halen on MTV and said, oh, that's what I want to do.
Okay.
So, you know, I badgered my folks for 6 months. You know, I want a guitar. And then, you know, so they got me one, and, you know, true to form as a kid, you know, messed around with it for about 2 months, and then in under the bed it
went.
And, you know, so then I was, I think it was my freshman year of high school, maybe. And I had tried out for the baseball team, and on the first day of the tryouts, I busted my index finger. So it was my high school baseball career ended that day.
So you had to do something, right?
And, you know, so once it started healing, I was like, oh, maybe I should try this guitar thing again. And, you know, I took lessons for, you know, 6 months, maybe a year, you know, just get the basics down. Right. And, you know, and it was, you know, like I said, I wanted to be Eddie Van Halen. I realized real quick that my fingers never are going to move that fast. And I, you know, from listening to blues and all that, you know, growing up,
sure,
it was already stuck in my head, and that's what I started playing.
And then when you started to play with the guys professionally, I mean, I heard a story you were playing with LV Banks beauty shop.
Yeah, that was one of the, that was actually the first professional gig, you know, because Marty Salmon and I grew up together.
Okay.
And he was playing with LV at the time, and, you know, and he was, you know, he was like, hey, man, you know, I'm doing this funky gig in a beauty salon with this guy, LV Banks. You should come down and, you know, sit in. And so we, you know, so I started sitting in with LV, and then, you know, Marty, you know, Marty was like, well, I'm starting to get better paying gigs. So he kind of dropped off. And then I just stayed there and worked with LV for probably 3-4 years on and off.
At the beauty shop? Or
oh, no. Well, it started at the beauty salon, okay, you right. know. And, you know, I mean, and that was, I mean, I was maybe 18.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I'm 18 years old. I'm in the middle of the ghetto, you know.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, we're playing and there's women getting their hair done, you know, all over the place. And, you know, I forget who the drummer was. I think it might have been Jerry Price. And, you know, first gig, we go on break, and he pulls a, you know, a half pint of Tanqueray out. Y'all want some? And I'm like, oh, okay. And the owner, you know, the owner was like, now, whatever y'all want to drink, you let me know. And every week when you come here, I'll have it for you. And so, you know, it's like, because they didn't, you know, they didn't, I don't think they cared if they knew we were underage or not, you know.
They didn't have a liquor license anyway, right?
No, exactly. Yeah. You know, it was always, you can drink as much as you want. Just make sure you put it in a cup.
Right.
You know, and it was, you know, we all had the, you know, it was, I think the name of the place was the My Inheritance Beauty Salon. And they had their own coffee cups. So it's like we had our own My Inheritance coffee cups. And, you know, it was a trip.
And this was on the South Side?
Oh, yeah. 64th and Halsted.
Nice.
You know, and, you know, it was funny because, you know, they were, you know, they were all, you know, Marty and I were the novelty.
Sure.
You know,
right.
Like, oh, look at these crazy little white boys coming into the neighborhood. But boy, they can play.
And then from there, where did you go after you left LV?
You know, I was working with LV and I was hanging out at the Checkerboard. You know, John Primer was, you know, doing Sundays and Mondays there. And, you know, so I would go down there every Sunday and Monday and hang out. And after about 3 or 4 months of me hanging out down there and, you know, getting to sit in, you know, John, you know, at the end of one of the nights, he was, you know, he's like, oh, I got a gig Thursday and the harp player can't do it. Can you do it? I'm like, sure, yeah, you know. He's like, all right, we're going to meet down here at the Checkerboard, and then we're going to go out to, I think it was in Downers Grove.
Mm-hmm.
So it was funny, though, because, you know, my first gig with John was at this place out, I think it was the Founders Hill Brewing Company.
Okay.
I don't think it's there anymore. But, you know, this was, you know, before GPS and, you know, cell phones, so of course, we get lost on the way out there.
Like, man, this Grove is a downer, man.
You know, I think we were supposed to start at 8 o'clock, and, you know, at 7:45, we're still 20 miles away.
Right.
Don't know where we are, you know. And, you know, we got there late, and I think he had Earl Howell on drums.
I know Earl, yeah.
And it was me, Earl, and Nick Holt was playing bass.
Nice.
You know, so it was basically, you know, Magic Slim and the Teardrops without Magic Slim.
Right.
You know, and it was funny because there was some guy there that was a harp player that got belligerently drunk and started messing with Earl. You know, we go on, you know, we're playing a set, you know, and we're playing, and this guy's like in, you know, he's on the side of the stage, you know, just, you know, yeah, you know, just, you know, needling Earl. And Earl finally jumps off the drum set in the middle of a song and just starts, you know, right. And, you know, I'm like, okay, this is my first blue, you know, real yeah. blues gig. And the drummer's going to beat somebody up. We were late. I don't know how we're going to get home because we don't remember how we got out right. here. Yeah. And it was all downhill from
yeah,
there.
Yeah, welcome to
know.
The club, right?
Yeah. You know, and it was, you know, on at the end of the night on that first gig, John was like, you know, he said to me, he's like, all right, what drugs do you do? How much do you drink? And if I need you, can I count on you?
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, well, I don't drink on my gigs. I don't do any drugs. And if you need me, call me. And, you know, and so I was with John for 2.5 years, I think.
So at that young age, I'm sure you're very impressionable.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What do you think you learned from John?
Oh, musically, you know, he told me, you know, once I was playing with him, you know, he would say to me, you know, a number of times, you know, he's like, before you leave this band, you're going to know how to do two things. You're going to know how to play behind everybody in the world, and I'm going to teach you how to play slide.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
By the time I had left his band, I knew how to play behind everybody, and he had started teaching me how to play slide, you know. Because, I mean, when I was, you know, I never played slide. And, you know, so he would, you know, he was hell-bent on making sure I knew how to play slide. So, you know, we'd be in the middle of a, you know, a muddy, slow muddy tune or
yeah.
something. He'd play a solo with the slide and then look at me and hold up his pinky finger. And I'd be, no, 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 no. And he'd like, yes, yeah, you know. And after a couple, you know, a couple seconds of put the slide on, put the slide. Then he leaned over and he's like, if you want to get paid, you're going to put that slide on. I said, yep, okay, here it comes.
It's your motivation.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd fumble through it. And then I'd get done and he'd, you know, get that look in his eye. And then, you know, he'd start smiling and then just go right back into it.
Right.
And then, you know, finish the song. Go, see, now that's how you do it.
that's cool because, I mean, I think the blues is such a tradition that's handed
oh, yeah,
down.
Yeah, yeah.
And John is a guy who's,
oh, yeah,
who's
definitely.
Great
yeah.
at teaching younger guys.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny now because, I mean, you know, he was the first one that, you know, took me out on the road. You know, I was 19 and, you know, it was, you know, that was 20-something years ago. And, you know, I mean, it's like he still calls me to this day, you know, if he needs, you know, he's like, I know you kind of busy, but if you can do it, I'd like to have you on a few gigs.
Nice.
So, you know, I mean, it's one of those where, you know, he's taught me well. And, you know, and it's funny, though, because I'll, you know, it's like if I go hang out, you know, if he's playing somewhere. He'll, you know, he'll make a big, you know, oh, we got Tom in the house. When I first started my band in 1995, after I left Magic Slim, Tom was my first guitar player. We started the band together. And every time I'm like, John, you had a lot of guitar players before I showed up. And he's like, yeah, but you're the only one that actually made something of yourself.
That's good. Well, it's cool that he remembers you,
oh, yeah,
calls you
yeah.
out, you know. Did you do any recording with John?
I did one record on Wolf. I think it was called It's a Blues Life.
Yeah.
So.
And was that your first recording?
That was first time in the recording studio.
Excellent. We'll be right back.
child. I've been abused and I've been kicked out.
Studios over on, I think it was Belmont, and that place isn't there anymore either.
Right, we're still here though.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
You know? I have conversations with musicians all the time about, oh, this club that's gone, oh, this club that's gone, or this club is just under the second owner,
oh,
third
yeah,
owner.
Yeah.
We're still here though.
Exactly,
that's the good news. Places come and go.
Yep,
you know?
Yep. But the music's always there.
Right. So you were with John for a few years, and then what was the next step?
And then I was. Then went on the road with Eddie Clearwater for almost 4 years. I think it was three and a half years. And with Eddie, that was the first time I went overseas.
Yeah.
And it was funny because the first the first time we went to Europe, I had actually never been on a plane at all. So, okay. You know, it's like, ooh, I'm going to Europe and I've never been on a plane. And, you know, so I was, you know, it was, oh, I got this. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. As soon as that plane took off, I was like, liquor cart. You know, I was like, I got this. I got this. I'm like, oh, man, I don't know about this.
Yeah. Didn't tell me we're going to be up this high.
You know, and it was one of those where, you know, I was nervous as all get out because I had never been on a plane. And, you know, just even the littlest bump, I'm thinking, oh, God, we're going to die. We're going to die.
Where were you guys headed?
It was Portugal. I think it was a festival in, I think it was Porto, Portugal. And you know, like I was saying, I was good and lubricated on that flight, and to the point where we had hit a spot of turbulence right before we started over the ocean. And, you know, everybody was kind of freaking out because, you know, Eddie was like, that's the worst turbulence I've ever had in my life.
And he's a seasoned traveler.
Yeah, and he's like, I've been doing this for I don't know how long, but that was the worst. I was a little drunk. At that point, I thought it was a roller coaster ride.
Yeah. Was Leroy Brown with the entourage at that time?
No. I mean, he was around, but he didn't go out on the road with Eddie at that point.
Okay.
You know, that was already past when he had been, you know, a full member of the band,
right,
and traveling with the band. So,
and some other highlights of working with Eddie.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I remember we did a bunch of, you know, cross country runs, you know, and it was one of those where, you know, back then, you know, you could work, you know, 5 or 6 nights on the road.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's like, we went to a lot of places and a lot of them I don't remember.
Right.
You
in know, and out, like, in and out. Yeah.
And people always, you know, are like, oh, it must be great to be on the road. You must get to see everything. I said, I can tell you the worst hotels, the best hotels, and what gas stations not to go to. I said, outside of that, it all melds together.
And a lot of time in the van.
Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and it was, you know, Eddie used to laugh because we'd get in the van and I'd put headphones on, and that was it.
Yeah, Tom's out.
You know, and it was like, you don't ever talk to nobody. You don't, you know, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to be in the van with you for 3 weeks. I said, if I need to say something, you'll hear me. How can you listen to music all that time? I said, sometimes I just put the headphones on and close my eyes so I don't have to listen to anything.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of inane conversations. I know that Eddie kind of has a little bit of rock and roll flavor in his guitar playing.
Yeah.
So did you pick up any things from playing with Eddie?
You know, probably it made me bone up on my Chuck Berry.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, cause you know, Eddie's, you know, that was part of his shtick was, you know, he could play that, you know, that old Chuck Berry stuff.
Right.
I pretty much learned the whole Chuck Berry catalog.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, you know, because you never knew what he was going to pull out. And
that's good to have that in your pocket. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. You know.
Around that time, you're also doing some freelancing, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was playing with Eddie, I mean, actually, when I was playing with John, too, I mean, I didn't do much freelancing with John just because I was still the new guy.
Right.
You know, and, you know, when I was with John, I started the first incarnation of the Shuffle Kings.
Mm-hmm. Your group,
you know,
yeah.
And, you know, that didn't really take off until, you know, when I was working with Eddie, you know, then it's, you know, people started to, you know, figure out who I was.
Paying attention.
And so, you know, it's like I started, you know, working with my band more around that time. And, you know, working with Eddie, you know, his booking agency, you know, they all had, I think they had at that point, I think Eddie was on there, I think Pine Top and Hubert and Carrie Bell, and I think Lockwood was on that agency too at the time. And I got to know the guys at the booking agency, and, you know, like Carrie Bell, you know, would have a Midwest run, and Carrie's band was based out of, I think, Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And so they started calling me going, okay, look, Carrie's got, you know, he's got 4 or 5 dates around the Midwest. You're off with Eddie. You know, he's not working. Can you get your band to go out with Carrie? And, you know, so I started doing that. And then it was then, you know, then I do some stuff with Pine Top, because at the time I think he was still living in La Porte.
Sure.
So, you know, Pine Top, I did a lot of work with Pine Top, you know, in the Midwest. And then, you know, and then Hubert found out about, you know, found out that I was, you know, moonlighting, playing behind all of the other guys. And he, you know, he's like, well, Tom, I'd like to have you play with me. And he's like, I love it when you play with me, because all the other guitar players, they all get up on the stage and they play all of my stuff. They, you know, they're trying to show me that they learn my stuff. But then what am I going to do? And, you know, Hubert always loved it because, you know, I would let him be him. And I just, you know, figure out something else to do. And, you know, and he was always like, you my favorite, Tom. You my favorite.
That's cool.
You know, and I worked with him off and on until he died.
And, you know, to me, Hubert is just one of those unsung heroes in blues.
Oh, definitely.
And, I mean, was there, did you, some sort of impact of, on your playing by playing with Hubert?
You know, with Hubert, it was always, you know, he was always flying by the seat of his pants.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was laughing. This was a couple years ago when Big Head Todd was doing that tour. I think it was like a Robert Johnson tour or something like that. But he had Hubert on it, and I think Cotton did a couple of the dates. And I think Honey Boy was on it, but they played in Chicago. And, you know, Hubert had, you know, he called me when he found out they were playing in Chicago. He called me. He's like, Tom, if you ain't working, I need you to come down and hang out. So, you know, we went down there and, you know, we hung out, you know, backstage before the show. And so while the show's going on, I'm, you know, we're sitting and I'm sitting watching this. And it was either some tune that Hubert didn't want to play on, or wasn't comfortable playing with it.
Right.
And it had some breaks in it. So what he would do, he'd turn the volume on his guitar all the way off and just sit there and smiling and just playing. And they hit the break, and there's Hubert still going.
Buddy.
And after the gig, you know, went back, and we're sitting around. And I said, Hubert, that one song with the breaks. He starts laughing. He goes, Tom, I forgot how that song went, so I just turned the volume down and just smiled and looked pretty. And I said, yeah, but you kept playing through the break. He goes, I didn't care. They couldn't hear me no way.
That's excellent, man. Wow. Well, any of these other guys, Hubert and Carrie Bell, I mean, have you did any recording with those guys?
No.
Just out on the road working?
Yeah, just out on the road. I mean, there was, I think I did a gig with Hubert in Kalamazoo at the for their Winter Blues series. This was, I don't know, maybe early 2000s. And I'm all, and it was, you know, sponsored by one of the radio stations up there. So, I mean, there may be some recordings floating around in
right.
that, but, you know, no studio stuff.
Okay. How about Eddie? Did you do any recording with Eddie?
Didn't do any recording with Eddie, but they had, we played at, in Boston at, the Boston Blues Festival 1 year. And, you know, that was one of those where they recorded everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think a year or so after we played it, they put out a live at the Boston Blues Festival CD. And so I think they had a couple of cuts that we had done with Eddie, you know, from live stuff.
That's cool to have a document of that.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah, you know.
And we both have worked with Byther Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about working with Smitty.
Oh, yeah, you know, and After I left Eddie's band, you know, I left Eddie's band. You know, I figured, okay, I'm going to try and make a go of this with my own band. And about 6 months after I quit Eddie's band, I think it was E.G. McDaniel was playing with Bither at the time. And, you know, he called me and he's like, hey, man, Bither needs a guitar player. Can you do it? And I was like, sure, yeah, you know. And it's like, you and I both know Bither can be very hard on his musicians.
Right, right.
And, I mean, I could remember seeing him, you know, bring a whole band, the whole band to tears, just berating him on stage because they're not playing it the way he wanted it to be played. The way he wants it.
It's a 13-bar blues.
Yep, oh yeah. And, you know, so Bither calls me. He's like, all right, we're going to have a rehearsal at the house. So okay. So we get to the rehearsal. I think it was Jerry Guzman was on drums, sure, and EG was on bass. And we get down to the basement, and this was the first time I had actually met Bither in, sure, person. And, you know, the first thing out of my mouth is, all right, this is good. We're doing this because if you do any, I said, if you turn around at me on stage and start yelling at me, I don't care where we're at. I'm packing my stuff and I'm going home. Right. I'm like, you want to yell at me? You yell at me down here.
Yeah.
But do not do that to me on stage.
Sure.
And he looked at me and he was like, who is this guy coming in talking like this to
right,
me?
Right.
And, you know, we did the rehearsal and, you know, he, you know, berated me about playing it the right way. Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, I got it to where, you know, he never yelled at me, you know, never gave me any dirty looks. He's like, you know, after that first rehearsal, he's like, you stick with me, son. You're going to be somebody one day,
right.
You know?
That's funny.
And, you know, we went all over the States and Canada, you know, because I think that at that time, that was when Bither started, you know, he'd go overseas and just use a pickup band over there.
Yeah, but he was be all, you know, one day he'd be in Kansas City and be in Austin, Texas.
Exactly. And, you know. And, you know, but it was, you know, Bither, you know, always, you know, that was, you know, Bither's thing was, I didn't learn from nobody. This is all. I taught myself.
Right.
B.B. King ain't got nothing on me.
Man, go to interviews, same thing.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I remember we were going to play, I think it was the Montreal Jazz Festival. I think he had, somebody had canceled at the last minute. And, you know, whoever was booking Bither at the time, you know, got Bither on the gig. And so E.G. McDaniel couldn't go. And I think he ended up getting Hassan Khan to go on bass. And, you know, we're driving up there and, you know, Bither was like, I don't know about, you know, when we got in the van, he's like, I don't know about this guy. I said, man, he's played with Phil Guy for years, and he's played with, you know.
I played with him with Johnny Twist in the 80s, yeah.
I'm like, he's played with, you know, I'm like, he'll be fine. He's like, oh, no. And he digs out, you know, a bunch of his tapes, and he's playing the tapes and everything. And so then, you know, we're driving along, and, Bither falls asleep, and he wakes up. And it was one of his, you know, one of the slow tunes. And, you know, Hassan had fallen asleep too. And so they both wake up right around the same time. And Hassan goes, hey, Bither, is that Buddy Guy on guitar? And I, you know, Jerry was driving.
Right.
I was riding shotgun. And Jerry just looks at me like, oh,
here it goes,
man. And Bither went on a rant for 45 minutes about how Buddy Guy can't play nothing. Buddy Guy learned from me.
Right, right.
You know, that ain't Buddy Guy. That's me. And it was just one of those things where after about 10 minutes, Jerry and I are laughing so hard. And Hassan, we stopped, and Hassan's like, man, y'all should have told me. I shouldn't have said something like that. I said, well, we didn't think you were, we didn't think you'd go there.
Right, yeah.
He goes, I didn't know.
But the thing about Smitty, I mean, when he's on.
Oh, yeah.
He could tear it up.
Oh, you know,
just as good as anybody.
Oh, yeah, you know. And that was one of the things that, you know, for me, you know, Bither, you know, that was, you know, it was always, you know, sets once he plugs in, you know, it's strap in because you're going for a ride. And,
yeah, it could be a 3-hour set,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah, you know.
But he had, you know, since he was a boxer, I mean, I think he had that killer instinct.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
There was never any laying down on the job.
No, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, with Bither, you know, more so with Bither than anybody else, it was you always keep an eye on him because you never know what he's going to do, oh, yeah. You know.
What Jerry used to talk about by the running through the cornfields.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and you got to be right there with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And come right back together.
Exactly, you know? Exactly, you know. And, you know, but that was one of those things where, you know, I used to laugh, you know, he'd have, you know, when I played, because I played with him for maybe a year, year and a half. Uh-huh. And, you know, by the time I was almost out of the band, you know, he started, you know, started going through a lot of different bass players or drummers. And it would, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, it's like every gig with a new guy, you know, Jerry would look at me and, oh, well, let's see how this one's going to shake
right.
out.
Right. Is this guy going
to
last?
You know, yeah. And it, you know, and it was funny, you know, because we all, you know, we had all gotten to the point where, you know, like I said, you know, Bither never screamed at me on stage. None of that. But it's like by the, you know, when he had new guys, he would, you know, he'd just turn and, you know, unleash on them.
Yeah, fair game.
You know, and it was, you know, we all laughed because it was like as soon as we'd start, everybody just look at the ground. Don't look up. Don't look up. Whatever you do, don't look up. Don't make eye contact. Don't poke the angry bear, you know.
Right. So you're freelancing, and then at some point you hooked up with James Cotton.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually still working with Bither at the time. And
James was kind of a neighbor of
when James was in Chicago, I think Bither was on the corner and James was like halfway down the block.
Right.
Cause you know, when I started playing with Cotton, you know, I was still working with Bither and he's like, oh, James Cotton, huh? Yeah. He used to be my neighbor. He's like, yeah. Yeah. I used to go check in and make sure everything was okay with his wife when he'd be out on the road. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's being a good neighbor.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, yeah, but I hate harmonica players.
Oh, yeah, don't get him started on Junior, right?
You know, but so yeah, I had when I got the call from Cotton, you know, his I think at the time he was using two guitar players. I think it was Slam Allen was one of the guitar players and Rico McFarlane was the other guitar player. And I had been, you know, Slam moved to Chicago when he started playing with James. And, you know, he started working in a couple of bands that I was working with as well, you know, throw together things where, you know, you never knew who was going to be on the gig when you showed up. And, you know, so I had, you know, started to get to know Slam, and I had told Slam, you know, hey, man, if Cotton ever needs a guitar player, I'm probably the one that would do the best for him, you know, and every time I'd see Slam, I'd just remember what I told you, if James ever needs a guitar player, and about maybe a year after that, you know, I was in New York City with my wife on a little vacation. It was right around Halloween. And, you know, we're walking around Times Square and cell phone goes off and, you know, I didn't recognize the number, but I was, hello. Oh, this is James Cotton's management. We need a guitar player to go to California for 3 weeks. And we've been, we got your number and we hear you're supposed to be the one that James should call. And I was like, sure. When are we leaving? November 2nd. And this was, I think, on Halloween, you know, I think it was Halloween morning. And I got back from New York. We flew back from New York on the 2nd. I think we got in at like 2 in the afternoon. And by midnight, I was jumping in the van and driving to California.
Wow.
You know, and so, you know, we drove from Chicago to, I think, Oakland. And, you know, we left out at, you know, they picked me up at midnight. And, you know, about 4 o'clock in the morning. We're, you know, driving up, you know, driving down the road. And the road manager's like, he's, you know, he was like, okay, I'm going to play you all of James' stuff. And I'm like, I've been playing James' stuff in my own band for years.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have to play any of those. Well, some of these have funny changes. I'm like, they don't have funny changes. They're hits. It's okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so he, you know, he's, you know, pumping me with all of James' stuff. And then, you know, then we're driving along and he's like, I've got a question for you, though. You didn't even ask how much the gigs were paying, how many gigs there were. You just said, yeah. He's like, why didn't you ask any questions?
Right.
And I was like, because when James Cotton calls, you don't say no.
Yeah. Like, we'll figure out the details later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's James Cotton, so I know the money's going to be good. You know, I'm like, but again, when James Cotton calls, you don't say no. And he was like, wow. He's like, well, do you want to know how much you're getting paid?
Yeah, by the way.
I said, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. We'll wait till we stop somewhere.
Yeah,
then you can tell me everything, you know, and... So we get out to, you know, and this was 2003, I think it was, maybe. And, you know, this was, again, before, you know, everybody had, you know, cell phones attached to them,
right,
24/7. And, you know, we ended up, you know, on the drive from Chicago to Oakland, you know, half the tour got canceled.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So it was like, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, well, we're not, okay, well, well, we're already out here, you know. So there were, you know, we ended up, you know, it was, there were a bunch of, you know, holes. So, you know, it was like, oh, and I'm like, oh, does this mean when we're out on the road not working, are we going to have to pay for our own room? Because if that's the case, I'm not coming home with no money.
Right, right.
And, you know, I mean, James paid for the hotel rooms, you know, and it was, you know, if the venue or the festival was paying for the, you know, if they were paying for the rooms, everybody got their own room. But when it was Cotton paying for the rooms, everybody doubled up.
Double up, yeah.
You know, which I had no problem
sure.
with, but, you know. But it was funny, that first gig we played at was Eli's Mile High Club in Oakland. And so we got into Oakland, you know, I think the day before the first gig. So, you know, we had enough time to at least sleep off some of the van wear.
Right.
And so we do the first gig and we're, you know, we get done with the gig and we're waiting to get paid at the end of the night, and manager get, you know, we're all sitting around waiting to get paid, and he pays everybody else, and he gets to me and he goes, I have to tell you. And he's like, you really do know James's music. He's like,
nice.
Usually we got to yell at the new guy. And he's like, you sound like you've been playing with James for 20 years. And I was like, well, I told you I've been playing his stuff. You know, I wasn't going to lie about that. And he goes, well, sometimes people will say a lot of things to get a gig. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not one of those.
Yeah,
you
nice.
Know? And, you know, we had played, you know, so we were out there for 3 weeks, and about maybe the third or fourth gig, you know, the whole time we were out there up until that like third or fourth gig, it was, hey, new guy. Hey, you. Hey, buddy. Hey, you. You know, it's,
right.
He never remembered my name. I was just, you know, I was the new guy. So, you know, third or fourth gig, you know, he throws me a solo and I start playing some like Luther Tucker stuff or something, like, you know, Luther Tucker or Lockwood stuff. And he swings around in his chair and his eyes are all bugged out and he's got a big smile on his face, and we get done with the gig and he's like, what's your name again, new guy? I said, Tom Holland. He goes, well, Tom Holland, you got a job for life. He's like, I didn't know people still played that stuff. He goes, and man, you good. He's like, well, we going to do a lot of work together.
Wow, that's excellent, man. Yeah.
You know, and I was there, you know, I played with James for 12 years.
And you guys did a couple records.
Yeah.
Grammy-nominated
records, yep.
Yeah. What were those records?
The first one was Giant.
Okay.
And that was the road band. At that time, it was Kenny Neal Jr. on drums, Noel Neal on bass, and Slam Allen was playing guitar and singing.
Upon a time, said if I'd be yours, you sure enough will be mine. But that's all right. You don't love me no more, baby. That's all right. Every now and then I wonder, darling. Loving you tonight. You told me, baby, your love for me was strong. Wake up early in the morning, find the big word gone. But that's all right. You told me a lie, baby. That's all right. Every now and again I wonder, darling. Ooh, loving you tonight. All right. I know you another man, baby. But that's all right. Every now and again I wonder, darling, who's loving you tonight?
Cotton hadn't had a new record out in a while, and I think he had just when I got in the band, he was just releasing his last of the Telarc records.
Right.
And so, you know, it was probably 3 or 4 years in between the last Telarc record and the Giant record. And, you know, he was starting to get itchy after about a year that, you know, he was like, well, I think they were closing up the blues end of the Telarc stuff. Right. So, you know, James was, you know, he was, you know, wanted to get a new record out, and, you know, nobody wanted to give him what he wanted. And he was like, well, I'll just do it myself. He goes, and then I'll sell it to somebody. so he was living in Austin at the time. So, you know, he flew all of us down to Austin for a week. You know, we rehearsed 3 days, you know, and then cut the record in two. You know, and it was, you know, it was one of those things where it was, you know, old school. Walk in, you know, no more than 3 takes. You know, and most of them, it was, you know, 1 take and done.
And the road band should be tied in from all the shows.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I mean, it was, you know, and it was one of those things where, you know, James was, you know, he had told me, you know, well, Tom, you know, I did a lot of things musically. You know, I had the big band and I had the funky band and the big band. And he's like, but I'm getting old, man. When I go out, I want to go out like I came in, playing the real blues. A lot of people were like, you know, they'd be like, man, James needs to play all the funkier stuff. And, right. You know, and it was, James was like, I can't blow like that anymore.
Oh, no.
He's like.
And James had a lot of energy.
Oh, yeah, but. Yeah. I mean, and then that was the thing, too. You know, I didn't, you know, I realized, you know, when I start, you know, halfway through the years of playing with James, the one thing I picked up from James, you know, was keep everything up tempo.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because it was like, I started noticing, like, on my own gigs, it's like, you know, it was, you know, first song, it's, you know, 100 miles, you know, let's just do
off
it.
Off to the races, yeah.
You know, and, you know, and people be like, man, how do you keep that up all night long? And I said, it's what I do.
Hanging with James.
Yeah, right? You know, and then I started realizing, right. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I'm playing with him on the road all the time. So, yeah, it's something's going to rub off. And, you know, and that's, you know, so it was, that was, you know, that was what I picked up from James, you know, that I mean, I'm sure there's plenty more that
sure.
I don't realize yet. Or it at all,
but he had an intensity and an energy about him, right?
You know, and I mean, and that was the other thing too. I mean, there would be times where we'd, you know, drive, you know, 8 hours between gigs and show up at the club, be all frazzled, and you know, he'd be all, you know, he'd just be like, oh, I just want to go take a nap. And it's like he puts the harp in his hand and it was like you flipped a switch. And
yeah.
He went from tired and hungry to let's do this.
Electrified.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thank you for listening to Confessing the Blues. Tune in next week for part two of my interview with Tom Holland. Until then, blues power.
All caught up in a landslide. Bad luck pressing in from all sides. Got me bucked off of my easy ride. Buried alive in the blues. Sunday morning, everybody's in bed. I'm out on the street talking out of my head. This old dumb brick wall ain't heard a word I said. Buried alive in the blues. I'm buried alive. I'm buried alive in the blues. I'm buried alive. I'm buried alive in the blues. I beg for mercy. I pray for rain. I refuse to be the one to take all the blame. Somebody here is polluting my brain. Buried alive in the blues. You know your people, or you walk on by. Some make me laugh, some make me cry. Ain't no use, because you know that I'm buried alive in the blues. I'm buried alive. I'm buried. I beg for mercy, I pray for rain. I refuse to be the one to take all the blame. Somebody here has polluted my brain.